is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a busy Sports Thursday as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. It's MLB opening day. We're tipping off the Sweet 16 later on this evening, and NFL Pro Days with some of the top prospects in the country continue to roll on from coast to coast. Michael, safe to say we are jam-packed yet again today. How are we doing?
We're doing great. I mean, there's no baseball back east, Stormy. I mean, we're going to build an arc fairly soon. There's too much rain here on the East Coast, but eventually we'll get to the Eagles. The Phillies canceled their home opener yesterday. It was supposed to be today, and they knew the weather. So hopefully, you know, Friday we'll have the home openers back here. But yeah, we got basketball, baseball. It's all the worlds are colliding, and we got NFL draft, workouts, Drake May, everything.
Yep. Unfortunately, like you mentioned, Phillies Braves as well as Mets Brewers, both of those games postponed, but still 13 games on tap beginning at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern. And as I referenced the Sweet 16, we got hoops, Michael, 4 games today, 4 tomorrow. Any one or two in particular that you are really excited about?
Well, you know, I'm going to love watching Connecticut because I think when you have a great team like that, they kind of teach you a lot about how to maintain competitive stamina, right? I think to me, that's what's so appealing about watching championship teams play is how they handle it, what they do, and how it goes forward. You know, I have Alabama in my Final Four, so obviously I'm interested in how they're going to match up against North Carolina. And, you know, Tate Frazier earlier in the week was in love with Illinois. I'm looking forward to it, to see them. And, of course, you know, I think a lot of this is just good games. I mean, when you go through it, I think San Diego, UConn going through the KenPom is the only game that has, what, an 8-point? He has it as an 8-point game. Everything else is relatively up and down, close within a 5-point radius.
Yeah, that's where he's got it. The odds makers, however, have seen this continue to grow. It opened at 9.5. Now at DraftKings, we're seeing 12. And this is, you know, you imagine both public bettors and people that do this for a living and day-to-day see what this UConn Huskies team is and feel confident that they're going to continue to beat teams at margin. They're 8-0 straight up and against the spread since the start of last year's tournament when it comes to these games in the dance. Have not won a game by fewer than 13 points yet. So we'll see if the Aztecs can ultimately cover that spread today. That Alabama-North Carolina line, by the way, UNC a 4.5-point favorite. High total in that one, 173.5. Let's get to a little football, though, because you talked about pro days. Drake May and Michael Penix Jr. today. We saw Jaden Daniels put his workout together yesterday. And coming out of that workout, Michael, there were a lot of people that said, okay, Jaden Daniels out here showing off a little bit, very complimentary, maybe trying to compete with all that JJ McCarthy hype. But I keep hearing people say that Jaden Daniels, Michael, is their number one quarterback in this class. Are the people that are saying that, do they really believe it? Are they just trying to be different? Like, Caleb Williams has been the guy for the last 2 years that we assumed is going to be the number one overall pick. He's minus 4,000 to go number one. Is any of that Jaden Daniels talk an actual reality, an actual possibility?
No, I don't think it is. I mean, you can just see by the behavior of the Bears that we know where Jaden, we know what's going to happen with Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams is, I would say, more of a polished player, more well-rounded than Jaden Daniels in the sense that, you know, I think he could play within a West Coast and he could play within a progressive read system. So I think to me, he's got a little bit more where I think Jaden Daniels would really excel is into the high-low game where, you know, he's reading off of a side of the field, read, look, and then use his athleticism to make plays. And, you know, look, I think all these guys, with the exception of Caleb, all these guys and JJ McCarthy, because he didn't transfer, but the other four have transferred, and the other four, they have experienced moments where they didn't play well in their school. Daniels, his last year at Arizona State, was not, you know, throws 10 touchdown passes, 10 interceptions. You're not sitting there saying, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be unbelievable, right? Mm. And then when he goes off to LSU and he kind of finds himself, and next thing you know, now everything's going well. So I think, you know, you have to kind of look at the whole longevity of their careers. Williams has been a better collegiate, and I think he can continue to get better. But Jaden Daniels is still a really good player, and I think he's going to make a team happy. I have a hard time believing he's not the second overall pick in the draft. I really do. I don't see how you can watch all the games and sit there and say, you see more in McCarthy's upside than you see in Daniels' upside.
The odds for the number two overall pick right now, Daniels is an odds on number minus 120, followed by Drake May plus 125 and McCarthy, who we've talked about a lot this week. Odds cut down significantly from 18-1 to now plus 275. And Drake May, who's having his pro day today in Raleigh, because of the, let's call it a polarizing nature of his tape, the highs and lows, the way that he's a perceived faller in this class. How important is what he shows at his pro day today? Like, does he need to nail it to get a pass in the pass fail of pro days? How do you view what he needs to show today?
Well, I think he needs to show more consistency, right? So I think when you look at the 22 tape, you're really kind of impressed. There's games in 22 where you say, that's why the conversation all fall was, could May uproot Caleb Williams for the first pick overall. It was the 22 year. And then as the 23 year came in where he lost a lot of players, it wasn't the same effectiveness that he had. You know, you could see it. I mean, as a redshirt freshman, Stormy, he's the ACC player of the year. I mean, that's a hard thing to accomplish, right? Not even the great Mitchell Trubisky could do that. So, you know, I think you got to take that into account. And then this year wasn't as good. And oftentimes, you know, you build a kind of a portfolio on just, say, certain season when you go back and look at the last year. And I think that's what teams are going to spend more time doing on May, because he's got this unbelievable size. He's almost 6'5". He could be 250 once he grows up. He's right now he's 240 and he's going to get bigger and stronger. We know that. And we know that, you know, as a freshman, he was dynamic, 38 touchdown passes, 7 interceptions. So last year was a setback. And I think this game, this workout, they're looking for consistency, his footwork, his mechanics, his rhythm.
Yeah, the physical tools, no question, as you referenced, they're pretty darn special. And I think, too, people forget as well that not this past season, but the year before, his ability on the ground, he rushed for nearly 700 yards. And even this past season, in terms of rushing touchdowns, had just one rushing touchdown fewer than Jaden Daniels did in that spot. In terms of his odds, like I referenced, plus 125 for him to go number two overall, minus 125 to go three, where he's the favorite in that spot, and 8-1 to go four behind Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.J. McCarthy. Michael Penix Jr. also having his pro day today. He was the Heisman Trophy runner-up in 2023, led Washington to the national championship, and had back-to-back healthy seasons with the Huskies, which was particularly important for him to demonstrate that he could have a full season of health. And that's the biggest question about Michael Penix when it comes to these evaluations is the medical, right? And how much will teams hold that against him in your mind?
Well, it's going to be up to the doctor, right? It's going to be what the doctor grades the knee injuries on and what the longevity is and how he can handle it. Look, as Belichick says, you know, if you tell me the player is going to get hurt on, I'll take him out to play before. Like, you just never know. And it's hard for anybody to judge, you know, right? Drew Brees wasn't supposed to throw another ball the rest of his life after he got hurt in San Diego with his shoulder. The Dolphins failed him on a physical. Next thing you know, he played how many more years in New Orleans? So it's really challenging to really get a good handle on that. But I will say this about Penix. I think Penix is really about where he goes, who coaches him, and the scheme around him. Penix is a home run hitter. I don't think Penix is going to be one of those guys who are going to go 3, 6, you know, 10 play drives. I think he's got that long ball accuracy that is rare to find. And I think ultimately he's going to need to be in the right system, a high-low system, half the field system, where they have outside receivers that he can really rely on to throw the football, because he can make some incredible throws. He really can, and he's deadly accurate down the field. On the third level, he's really good. But there are some times where he loses the strike zone, especially in the short and intermediary game.
Yeah, this setting, though, with your guys, with Roma Dunze being somebody that you're throwing the ball out there to as well, you imagine, like, the ball placement, he's going to put on a show today. And it has been a great two-year stretch for him at Washington. The injury history, two torn ACLs, two different shoulder issues. So how comfortable are teams going to be with that injury history? As far as the odds go for Penix, the Vikings are a plus 250 favorite for that to be his landing spot, followed by the Raiders at plus 320. Seattle Seahawks 4-1, Broncos 5-1, Patriots 7-1. Is there a place, because you talk about the fit being so important, is there a place or a team that you do think would make sense for him? And is he a first round guy to you?
I don't think he's a West Coast offense guy. Yeah, I do think he's a first rounder. I think he could be really dynamic in the Sean McVay offense. You know, the hard play action over routes. That's what he throws at Washington. You know, down the field throws. You know, getting him into some situations where to utilize his ability on the third level, using his foot movement. You know, that kind of thing. You know, it's not. There are variables of the West Coast, and McVay runs a lot more down the field. We see that with Stafford when he throws the ball accurately. I think that's kind of what you need him to be in. I could see him being very effective in that offense.
Michael, do you see any of Joe Milton's pro day clips that went viral yesterday?
I just saw look, here's what I would say about Joe Milton. There was never a doubt he was going to run fast and throw it far, right? That's not going to be his issue. His issue is instinctively, can he play the position in a manner and style that allows consistent execution? And that's really the issue. That's why he got recruited to go to Michigan. That's why he came back to Tennessee. His skill set is elite, elite. It just doesn't show eliteness when he plays the game at the quarterback position, which happens to a lot of guys. This is just not uncommon.
4.5540 at 240 pounds, and he threw the football over them mountains, as Uncle Rico would say in Napoleon Dynamite, because they actually had to move the pro day from the indoor facility to the outdoor because they were afraid that he might hit the ceiling with the way that he was chucking it down. I mean, he's thrown an orange 100 yards before, but 6 years in college football, he's trying to steer GMs away from the actual game film. We got to hit the break. When we come back, one deal did get done in the NFL yesterday, as well as some other big picture draft props to get into.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't been there yet, you gotta head down to Total Wine and More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's so easy to find your favorite. All the lowest prices for over 30 years. You'll find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 21. Alongside Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, VSiN's own Mike Somich will join us, get into a little Sweet 16 action. It's opening day, so maybe he's got an MLB play. Last week, he shocked us with some NHL action, so you never know what you're going to get with Mike Somich. But we'll stick with the NFL here, Michael, where yesterday the Carolina Panthers signed Jadeveon Clowney to a two-year, $20 million contract, max value $24 million. And with Brian Burns gone, Carolina needed somebody, and they go ahead and get Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, I mean, look, he had such a good year last year, and you always worry about a guy when you sign him to a contract, come an older player with injury history that he had a good year. Can he duplicate that again? But this was a homecoming for Clowney. He wanted to be near his home. I think he wanted to be back in the Carolinas, certainly, and going to Charlotte is something that appealed to him. And obviously, I think ultimately, you know, the Panthers just blew everybody out of the water with this deal. They get a guy that they probably are rationaling behind, saying, look, he had a better year than Burns did last year, had more pressures, could take over the game in a different fashion, and we got him on a two-year deal and didn't have to pay a lot. So you could talk yourself into it. We'll see if he, you know, again, if he could stay healthy and if he plays to the level he played last year in both run and pass. He was good in both areas now. It wasn't like he just came on the field in nickel. Got 9.5 sacks for them. I mean, they got 18.5 sacks out of two players that were unemployed on August the 1st.
Yep. Tied a career high with those 9.5 sacks, 19 quarterback hits, 2 forced fumbles, 43 tackles on what was a $2.5 million prove it deal. He proved it. He got the contract with Carolina. And you referenced going back home. Of course, he is from Rock Hill, which is just outside of Charlotte, went to South Carolina for college, had one of the best college football plays in existence in that Outback Bowl against Michigan, where he pops the running back's helmet completely off and still gets the ball. Just one of the best ever. But yeah, I'm happy for him. After a resurgent year, he's able to get that done. Why do you think that this is the first time in such a long time that he's gotten a deal done this early? You're talking to producer Elliot in the commercial break. Since he left Houston, This is the earliest he's signed a deal. And he's been on 6 different teams now.
Well, I think this is the best year he's had in his career. Highest year in sacks, right? And this is the best he's had. And there was competition. You know, the reason you don't sign before that is because there's no competition. You're trying to get competition. But clearly, I think the Jets wanted to sign him. I think the Jets had some interest in him. The Jets are obsessed with replacing Bryce Huff. Why they didn't franchise Bryce Huff, I don't know. They should have kept him. They knew the Eagles were all over him. They were contemplating it. They didn't do it. I think it's going to hurt them in the long haul because they're going to count on some players who maybe aren't as good as Huff to replace them. So, you know, and there were other teams that were probably still kicking tires on Clowney that we don't know about because he was so good last year, and it's hard to find guys that can get to the passer. I mean, look, Chase Young did a one-year deal with New Orleans. Now we know he's got the neck injury, but Young had anywhere near the season that Clowney had last year for them.
And Carolina, a team, as you referenced, certainly needed it, had the fewest sacks and pressures in the entire league a season ago. We are also less than a month away from start of the NFL draft now. And while Chicago is on the clock with that number one overall pick, ain't nobody I know is laying that minus 4,000 for Caleb Williams. I mean, at least I personally don't have the bankroll. Maybe those of you listening out there do. I don't. Therefore, let's look at some other markets because in addition to who will go picks 1 through 5, DraftKings has odds for which team certain players will be selected by, which position a team will take with their specific pick, and of course the number of position totals that are out there. Michael, in your experience as a former general manager, as somebody in scouting, what's your general strategy for drafting in the first round? Should teams focus more on need, or is it the best player available? What's your preference?
Well, I think you have to bet in the first round. You should try to get what you can't buy in the free agent market, right? You can't find you can't find defensive linemen in the free agent market, especially big guys who can run. Now, Christian Wilkins made it there, and credit the Raiders for signing him. But it's hard to find those guys. So if there's a defense, like, for example, the Raiders passed up a 3-technique last year to take Tyree Wilson as an edge player. You can always sometimes find edge guys. You can't find 3-techniques. That was a mistake. Same thing with the Bears. They had, you know, same thing with the, with the teams that had an opportunity, the Atlanta Falcons. They're still looking for a 3-technique, and they took another running back. You could have a running back. I'm not saying he'll be as good as Bijan. Probably not. But the difference between the back you get in the third and Bijan is not that much, whereas the 3-technique to the backup three to the next 3-technique is significant. So you have to kind of draft what you can't buy in the free agent market. And I think that's really critical. And you want to try to get something that has some rare quality to them, you know, where Carter was exceptional, could take over the line of scrimmage, could dominate a game. And that's what you're trying to hope for. You're hoping to get somebody who can impact the game. And when you get past a certain point in the first round, we're really talking about second round. I know everybody just talks about, I have a first round grade on this guy. Most teams, Stormy, have probably maybe between 16 and 20 players that they have a grade that is worthy of taking in the first round. And that's usually about the number. And then once you get past that, from 21 to 45, you're probably the same level of grade. Now, nobody would believe that because all these other names are coming out there. Oh, my God, how could they take them that early? Well, they're all kind of clustered together. And so I think you that's where you see it. And so when you move around in the draft to get more picks, you're really saying, look, the same guy I'm picking at 27 is the same guy, different position, but the same grade that I'll pick at 42.
So, Michael, let's throw up some of these offensive position totals here quickly. And I'm curious what you've heard from around the league when it comes to the strengths of this year's draft class and if or how it matches up with some of these numbers. In terms of total offensive players to go in the first round, that number sits at 20.5. O-linemen, which is supposed to be a particularly talented class, especially at the tackle position, 9.5. Quarterbacks, an intriguing one at 4.5, minus 200 to the over on that one after it was juiced to the under at initial posting. Wide receiver 6.5, running backs over under 0.5. So will there be a running back that goes 1? And we joked on Why Not Wednesday yesterday. You're not taking that 10-1. It's not happening with this batch. But the other positions, what are some of your general thoughts?
Well, I think the quarterback, that let's start there. Quarterback at over under 4.5. I think it's going to go over there. I really do. I think that, you know, what you're counting on is, you know, you're going to get May, you know, you're going to get Williams, you know, you're going to get Daniels, right? So what you're saying to yourself, does Nix and McCarthy, I mean, that's 4. Just, you got McCarthy there, put him in there. So now is Nix or Penix going to be the 5th one? And I think there's a good chance that Nix can go. And I think if you're a team that maybe like what Tennessee tried to do and get back into the first round to get Will Levis, I think that one jumps out at to me. I would play the over 5, the over 4.5. I think that would be the number. I could see 6 going. I'm not saying 6 would be worthy to go, but I could see that. The offensive lineman is kind of the strength of this draft lies in the offensive lineman, in the sense that there's a lot of good, there's a lot of good players kind of in the, you know, in that second round area of offensive linemen, right? So, you know, is there a legitimate left tackle? Yeah, of course there is. You know, certainly Alt could play left tackle. You got Latham, you know, you've got a bunch of different guys. So I think that could push that number to the under, because I think teams would say, okay, I can get another lineman in the second. If I can't get the left tackle, I'll get another lineman in the second. So you have to be kind of careful. Receivers at 6.5, to me, I think I would go under there, because I think the three that are going to go early are, you know, Harrison, Neighbors, and I definitely think that Thomas will go. Now you're dealing with Coleman and you're dealing with Adunze. You got to get him in there. So that's 5. And then where's the 6th one come from?
Yeah,
I don't know where the 6th one comes from.
Michael, yeah, the majority of projections that I'm seeing also have sat there at 6, minus 220 to the under for wide receivers. I'm kind of hoping that some sports book will put out a prop of will QBs go 1, 2, 3, 4 for the first time in NFL history, because we have not seen that yet. But all indications appear that somebody's going to try to trade up for a quarterback, whether it be J.J. McCarthy or whomever is available at that spot, in pick 4 or pick 5. Which of those teams between the Cardinals and Chargers do you think is most likely to trade out of their position?
I think the Chargers for sure, because I think what Harbaugh was saying, he's going to take he don't want to take a receiver. He doesn't need a quarterback, and I think he'll move down to take an offensive lineman. Look, I think the team that's sneaky. So John Mara, one thing about the owners' meetings is you have to analyze what everybody says. John Mara says at the owners' meetings he's not going to block a potential pick at 5 for the, or is it, there's 6. The Giants are at 6 for the Giants at quarterback. If they really feel passionate about the player. Well, and then they're out working out J.J. McCarthy, which fits. McCarthy kind of fits the kind of player the Giants would like. So I think, you know, for all the teams, I think the Giants are another team that's going to pick a quarterback. I'm reading the tea leaves with no knowledge, but it seems that way to me.
Yeah, they've had visits with McCarthy and Drake May. We're at Jane Daniels Pro Day yesterday. The Giants were at Mays today, so something we'll monitor. I actually have a follow-up question on that one for you for later on in the show. When we come back, Mike Somich will join us. Time for a little college hoops.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Only 2 days left to sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription with our latest deal for the first year. Only $199 compared to the usual $240 price. Get in there now and use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you pro access to everything we do for the entire year, which includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game and round of the tournament as things advance. Remember, this offer expires Friday. Sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi, VSiN Pro Access for only $199.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
So every year, Michael, the NFL makes a variety of changes. This year, more radical change than we are accustomed to when it comes to the new NFL hybrid kickoff. Also, the ban on the hip drop tackle. You got a lot of players upset about it, saying you're watering down the league. What even is a tackle? No way or no doubt. The NFL is legislating defense and special teams out of the game. How do you feel?
No doubt. No doubt they are. They're trying to they want it to be a high-scoring affair. They don't really want special teams. They don't see the need for special teams. They don't understand special teams. And they would just rather have the offense have all the rules in their favor and go from there. And they don't understand the essence of the true game. And so all these rules are making it, and they do it under the disguise of player safety. when we're not sure that it's actually the case. And football is a three-dimensional game. You need to play good defense. Because look, I've said this many times, the Patriots went 8 years without winning a Super Bowl after they lost to Denver in a divisional game. And they led the league in scoring three times. They never were lower than eighth in the league in scoring during that whole period. And yet they couldn't get over the hump. They lost two Super Bowls because they couldn't score in the key moments of games. So defense matters. And then they win three Super Bowls in 5 years and go to four Super Bowls because they really improved their defensive front and they improved their defense. So I think, to me, you can't take defense out of it and you can't take the kicking game out of it.
It's the offense's world and we're just living in it, it seems like, right now. Speaking of which, the quarterback position, the most important on the football field, and the QB1 in Dallas has some interesting things come up about his contract. Earlier this week, Ian Rappaport reporting there is no indication the Cowboys will complete an extension with Dak Prescott. No way or no doubt, Michael. Prescott will be the Cowboys quarterback to start the 2025 season.
No doubt. I mean,
he's not going to hit the free agent market.
Pay him. No, I don't think he will. I think Jerry will pay him. Look, he's got him. You know, it's funny. We were talking about this on the podcast. We were grading the players in the draft based on the verbiage of the grading system. And, you know, Dak is one of those players who's really good. He doesn't carry the team. He helps the team, right? And so, but he's paid like a guy who carries the team. And God bless him. You know, he's this version of Kirk Cousins without going through free agency. I mean, he leaves no money on the table ever, you know, and this is why they're in this jam. I mean, his cap number is $55 million. And if they leave him, let him go, is his acceleration from redoing his deal. I mean, Dak has made a fortune and hasn't really produced wins in playoff games. He's no different than Kirk Cousins.
Dak Prescott and the Cowboys season win total this year, 10.5. He's on the final year of his deal. Mike McCarthy on the final year of his as well. Speaking of Kirk Cousins, his former wide receiver, Justin Jefferson, looking to get the bag himself. And their head coach, Kevin O'Connell, talked about Jefferson's impact on the QB situation at this week's league meetings in Orlando. He said, I felt strongly about keeping Jefferson informed. He's been in the loop. He's been aware. He's allowed to articulate things to me via our relationship. And that's been through this whole process. No way or no doubt, Michael, Justin Jefferson deserves to have a say in the Vikings' next quarterback.
No way. I mean, he should worry about just playing it and he's going to get paid. Like let the coaches and the personnel guys handle that. He's got enough on his plate being a great player. And he's got to trust the people around him. It's no different than when you're playing in a basketball game and you see the open man, you pass the ball, or the open woman, you pass the ball, and you trust they're going to make the shot. He has to trust that the Vikings will do the right thing.
While there's no argument that Justin Jefferson is an elite wide receiver, he deserves to get paid. There's some wideouts who are getting paid a little more than they probably deserve at this point. And new Eagles, running back Saquon Barkley had something to say about that. Take a listen.
It's easy to say, like, oh, what they're doing to the running backs is not fair. And I don't believe that. There's guys, you know, I'm not taking shots of anybody, but like there's receivers and positions like who have 600, 500 receiving yards or this amount of stats, and like they're getting paid more than running backs. And it's like,
it's bogus. It really is bogus.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But like, even like same thing with tight ends is like, you're not just a tight end. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and you got wide receivers that are probably making a more money than you
with less production.
And yeah. And it's not fair.
And I did love, by the way, at the end of this comment coming from the New Heights podcast with Travis and Jason Kelsey. He said, if running backs want to get paid more, like, we got to earn it. We got to go out there and show why we deserve more. Yeah. But no way or no doubt, Michael, elite running backs should be paid more than some of these middle tier wide receivers.
No doubt. And I've been saying that forever. You know, the analytical community has really been the one who hates running backs, you know. And there is some merit to the fact that you can find backs. I don't disagree with that. Like I said about Bijan Robinson, I'm all for, I think the Falcons should have taken Carter over Robinson. However, when you get one who's dynamic at the right price and you're not using a high draft choice to get him and he can impact. Remember, Aaron Jones was a fifth round pick. And he can impact the passing game, then you've got to pay the guy to the fair market. And he's more valuable than a third receiver. I mean, think about this. Last year, the Raiders carried Hunter Renfro on their team at $16 million a year, and they struggled to want to pay Josh Jacobs. How does that make any sense at all?
That's like saying one plus one does not equal two. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you said, well, Josh Jacobs is going to have a shorter. Really? I mean, Hunter Renfrow has no career anymore. So it's like these inside receivers are getting it. And I thought what Barkley said about Kelce, and he did it really in a great way. Kelce's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. He has been selfless in taking money. He could easily take more money and say, look, I want to get paid like Christian Kirk, who got a huge deal. I want to get paid like Calvin Ridley. But he kind of settles in the market to help the team. But he is he impacts the game, or did. I don't know if he continues to, but they deserve to get paid. And just like these running backs who can impact the passing game, they deserve to get paid.
Chris Ballard has heard all the negative comments about the Colts prioritizing re-signing their internal free agents versus going out and getting a big name in free agency. He responded and said, different is not always better. We did spend. We just didn't spend on outside names. At the end of the day, we know who our players are. We thought our free agents were good players. ESPN's Stephen Holder did report that the Colts offered Danielle Hunter more than the Texans did, but Hunter chose Houston. No way or no doubt, though, when it comes to Chris Ballard, he should be criticized for not spending money on big name outside free agents. Thoughts?
No way on that one. I think, look, I think that just because you didn't sign a big name doesn't mean you didn't improve your team. And I think what Chris did was take the money and put it in players he knows as the ones he didn't. He tried to sign Hunter. Obviously, that, you know, the Texas state free tax market really helped. So I think ultimately you can't control that. But what he needs to do is he needs to fix his team, right? So if you just bring back your team, are you really improved, right? You got to be able to get some other additions. They need secondary help. They passed on Snead because I think they were worried about his overall medical. Was he going to last the length of the contract? And then they were going to have to pay a high pick, which ended up not being true, for a guy that they were going to have to then pay a lot of money to. So for me, I think a lot is to be determined how he handles the next couple weeks.
One of my favorite quotes coming out of Orlando this week from Steelers reporter Mark Cavalli of The Athletic. He said on the Pat McAfee show, Mike Tomlin loves Russell Wilson. Loves him like you're looking at your little baby kid at home. He absolutely loves him. You hear things about potentially could Justin Fields beat him out? That's just not going to happen. He's going to have to fail catastrophically in season for there to be a move. No way or no doubt, Russell Wilson will be the Steelers QB1 no matter what. Tomlin loves him.
I believe there's no doubt he'll be the starter because I think what Mark said is true. And I think by the way that the Steelers got this deal done so quickly, as I said, there had to be some kind of conversation between Tomlin and Wilson that Wilson liked what he heard. And I think he liked what he heard. So for me, I think there's no question.
I think that, like, barring an injury, Russell Wilson has to be the QB1 from day one. Because, like, I just don't think that being a veteran and getting the reps that you get in preseason, there's just not opportunity for him to lose that job in my brain. I don't know. I agree what he said, though. Something would have to go wrong in season for there to be a change.
Yeah, I just think to me, Russell's experience, and Arthur's going to want somebody that he can count on. I mean, remember, Arthur's in a little bit of a shell shock world from Ridder's not protecting the ball. He starts to see Fields not protect the ball. He's going to have deja vu all over again, as Yogi said.
There you go. From day one, I'm just curious how long the leash will be for Russell Wilson. But yes, from day one, it certainly feels like his job. We'll be right back. Mike Palm joining us for the final 30 minutes.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That's how you earn a $500 bonus for every $1,000 you wager right now.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now, my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Let's get into it. Palms Pressing 3.
Okay, Michael, let's start off with this major. I think this is a major rule change with the kickoff now. And I have several questions about it. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how this affects the game from a betting perspective. I assume that it's going to give better field position because you're between the 40 and the 30, and no more fair catch. From your perspective, did you like this rule change? How do you think it affects scoring in the game? And why didn't they just eliminate the kickoff and you start at the 25?
Well, because I think they wanted to make it an offensive game. And I really believe they think this, the ball will come out to the 30, 35. It'll make it a lot easier for the offense to move the ball. Everything is done with the idea to hurt the defense. Every rule they put into place. So I don't like it because it takes out that, you know, the, one of the greatest plays of all time were the onside kick in the Super Bowl that Sean Payton called, right? And so I think when you lose that play, you lose that strategy, and it affects the overall game. How are you going to gain an extra possession on the Chiefs? How will you gain an extra possession on the Bills or Miami or a team that you're really worried about playing that you feel undermanned? That takes away an advantage you might have. So I don't like it from that. I think the idea that it's going to stop violent collisions, I think, is wrong because we know this. We see violent collisions in short spaces with these guys. It's going to be interesting the players they select to play within this group and how they handle it. I think there'll be some deception, but I do think field position will change, and I think that's the ultimate effect of the rule.
Do you think they considered, or what would you think of, with Stormy's leagues, instead of the onside kick, you have a 4th and 12 or whatever, the Pro Bowl, you go 4th and 12 from your own 30 or 35, because this onside kick, you know, this 3% is nonsense if you have no element of surprise, as you say.
Yeah, no, I get that, and but I love the element of surprise. But I think, to me, why should a team who's built a 2-score lead have to defend a 4th and 12 to keep that lead? Like, it's got to be something. If you get behind by 2 scores, it should be really hard to come back in the game. It should be you have to do something unique to get yourself back in the game. And the odds, and that's why we have those odds that show up, the win percentage, not that they're accurate, but the win percentage, it, you know, this is going to be a challenging game for you to win. You, everything has to go right. And I don't think you should increase the odds to make everything go right to benefit the team who fell behind.
Final thought on rules here, Michael. I wish they would put the chip in the ball. Why can't they put the chip in the ball and get the spots accurate, the field goals accurate, the punts out of bounds accurate? Why not embrace the technology?
I agree. But, Mike, can I have a palm pressing three back to you?
I'm like Judge Judy. I don't answer questions. I'm just kidding.
who will call more of the illegal tackling, my man Scott Novak or your favorite official?
I think Scott Novak. Just because he wants to insert himself in the game through his crew, although you make a good argument, because Brad Allen couldn't get the roughing the passer right. I mean, he made some horrific. Remember, like they just tackled Rodgers one time around the waist. He called right. He screwed up the roughing the passer, which is the only thing that official has to do. Your referee has to do is roughing the passer, because they call more holding now from the umpire. Okay.
Hold on. I know you have 2 more questions, but because you brought up the technology, the UFL, they don't have a chip in the ball for the spotting. They'll still do normal official spot, but they do have like this visual technology for the first down to where you don't have to bring chains out there. So there's not going to be a chain gang that brings it out onto the field to measure. They have the visual spatial stuff that says if you got it or not. And up top, if they can tell a spot is wrong, they have the ability to come down and say, hey, you need to move it here.
Is Mike Pereira doing it? Is he going to be
Mike Pereira and... what's the younger guy's name? I can't think of his name right now. But he's also doing it from Fox.
Pereira's horrific on TV, by the way, and good to hang out with at the bar. He's a very entertaining guy.
He is.
Anyhow, I like it because of all this, you know, Michael, these guys coming in, these 65-year-old guys in the zigzag. One guy's got the ball to 37. The other guy on the opposite side is there. I mean, just put it in. You forward progress is where the chip is, right? I mean, anyhow.
Yeah, Dean Blandino. Exactly.
Dean Blandino, the younger. The younger good-looking guy there at the Fox. Anyhow. All right, Michael, let's get on to something that may be more in your wheelhouse. Right there in Philadelphia, in your backyard, Jake Rosenberg has announced he's leaving the Eagles. I didn't know who Jake Rosenberg was, but I've been reading these stories. He's their salary cap executive. who specializes in the salary cap. So multiple part question. Does every team have one of these salary cap executives? And how important is it that they are losing Jake Rosenberg?
Well, Jake Rosenberg was best friends with Howie Roseman. That's how he got the job. Howie Roseman was a salary cap analyst before he became the general manager. So Howie trained Jake to do that job. And certainly Jake brought wisdom and brain power to it. He was on Wall Street. He came from a financial background. He was good with numbers. So it plays within it. But at some point, Mike, the cap guy only can work numbers. Somebody has to put a dollar sign on the value of the player, right? Somebody has to say, this guy's worth X, this guy's worth Z, this guy's is not worth what they're asking for. That really comes down to a combination of the personnel person and the salary cap guy understanding the market value. You go to your cap guy and say, okay, we think this player's in the top eight at his position based on our grades. What should that salary be equated to? And then the cap guy comes in and says, okay, here's the market. Here's where we think the market could change. Here's where we're going to go. I think Jake wanted to get a GM job. He wasn't even getting any interviews, so he decided to leave. Howie gave him a lovely goodbye, but I think their relationship is still good, but he's a replaceable player within the framework of what they do.
Okay, final question, Michael. Why is the NFL just so much better at marketing their sport than the other big three? Here we sit, Michael, it's noon where you're at, and it's the opening day of baseball. We haven't had a pitch. They couldn't play in the dome stadiums. They try to run it up against the Sweet 16. It's Easter weekend. I mean, it's a disaster. Major League Baseball, this is a day they should own on their own. Can't do it. The NBA can't get their players to play. Fans buy tickets. The stars don't play a third of the game. It's ridiculous. Yet the NFL pivots. They say, we're not going to play on Christmas next year. The ratings are through the roof. We're going to have a doubleheader on Christmas. Hooray for Survivor, right? That makes our even twin. Why is the NFL just so much better?
Well, because I think the NFL is run by the owners. The owners run their league, and they're not afraid to say things that that they need to do to make their league the best it can be. They vote for the what they use the term the good of the league. Whereas in the NBA, they want it to be for the good of the players because the players are the league, which there's no question the players are the league in the NBA. But you got to have a working partnership with the players. You've got to have the ability to get your players to play. Once again, if you pay for a Broadway ticket and you go to the matinee, okay, you might get the stand-in. But if you go to the Saturday night show at 8 o'clock, you expect the star to be there. You can't expect the star to be there. I mean, look, you go pay tonight. Bruce Springsteen's going to pay at the Chase Center in San Francisco. It's sold out, right? Is somebody going to play the lead guitar in that show? No, of course not. He's going to play. You know, he's going to play. You're paying to see him play. I'm paying to go watch the players on the 70, but they don't play. And so fans get frustrated, and they lose their enthusiasm. And plus, let's face it, football's chess on grass. It combines strategy with violence. And who doesn't love that?
Michael, is that why you get annoyed at, I mean, just the element of the new kickoff that you feel is gimmicky to an extent? Because the NFL is already so good at so many things. Why are you trying to change for the sake of change?
Why are you messing with it?
Yeah.
Why are you messing with something that's already good? Like, you don't need to change anything. You know, and I thought the owners would not, but the commissioner's all on the player safety thing. You know, look, Malcolm Gladwell 10 years ago said that the NFL stadiums would be like the Roman Coliseum. They would be all empty. It's a fact. He said that, you know, football was going to go away. And the football has gotten nothing but stronger. There were some people, Mark Cuban included, that thought the NBA would take over the NFL. Mark Cuban no longer owns the Mavericks. He sold them. So I think this league is going to stay around a while, and it's so popular. Wait till you see what they pay to get the rights to have that the games on Sunday, on Christmas Day. That's going to be incredible, and it's going to the players too. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, your comments about Christmas, the fear for Survivor that you're not going to have games and now you get a doubleheader.
Yeah, you can't just have two games somewhere. You got to make it at least three. Now we can do the two Christmas Day with the Thursday the next day.
Mike, by the way, will be here tomorrow all show, as he is every Friday. Michael, enjoy the next couple of days off. If you are watching right now on VSiN, Sharp Money, Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson coming up next. If you are on DraftKings Network, Pablo Torre finds out. Have a great day. Enjoy opening day and enjoy the Sweet 16. We'll be right back.